Jay Mariotti here, and much as we continue to dissect the existential issues of football, damn, this stuff is electrifying in the month of December. Shoot me for saying it, but that's why TV ratings are massive, and the gamblers and the fantasy geeks are engaged like never before. Nothing else in sports matches the consistent intensity, weekly significance, and down-to-the-wire drama. The 49ers and Saints traded leads like brawlers throwing jaw-droppers, and then you saw a savage George Kittle rambling like a crazed beast and pulling defenders down the sideline, ending that 94-point thriller that begs for a rematch in the NFC title game. And the Patriots were booed by those spoiled New Englanders, with Bill Belichick blowing an early challenge, using up all his flags, and unable to contest two bad calls, while Tom Brady and his weapon-weak offense again looked feeble, furthering suspicions that the Belichick-Brady mystique is fading to black. The Patriots lost even though Patrick Mahomes played with an injured throwing hand that could impact the Chiefs in the playoffs, the MVP delivering a fiery sideline speech, and then a victory that broke the Patriots' 21-game home win streak. And I'm every bit as transfixed by what's ahead in college football. Three undefeated super teams, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, determining the national championship without regional bias or media polls or any external element beyond 120 by 53-yard fields of turf. I know we're supposed to abhor football and tell our children not to play it. And it is repulsive watching hits to the head, one by a swung helmet recently, and these never-ending hideous officiating plagues. But when the game is played right and called right, and you watch Jimmy Garoppolo get it done on fourth down, and Lamar Jackson perfect a sort of quarterbacking ballet, yes, football is still intoxicating as an American entertainment form. Admit that much, haters.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names.
Mom doesn't like it
some
very much.
Actual
so
truth. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years.
For 17 years.
Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood.
Back from his day job in Hollywood.
For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
It's a travesty, I know, that the NFL refuses to even consider a reseeding format that would punish a division winner with a non-winning record. How preposterous that either the 49ers or the Seahawks will have to play on the road without a bye when they could have the very best two records in the conference, while the winner of the dog-ass NFC East, the Cowboys or Eagles, might be 7-9 and actually host that game. The league is only hurting itself. The teams with the best records deserve the week off and home field advantage, and one of them does not deserve an arduous road journey to a place such as Dallas, where Jerry Jones' post-game profanity-filled rants have become as embarrassing as his team's terrible performances. Just as the 49ers and Seahawks played a game last month that neither team deserved to lose, the 49ers engaged the Saints in an epic back-and-forth that finally produced the ending we have demanded from Garoppolo. Final-minute heroics in which Jimmy G, who has not delivered in the clutch heretofore, flipped a 4th-and-2 pass with 39 seconds left to Kittle, who hauled ass and muscled through Saints defenders as they clawed at him, including safety Marcus Williams, who grabbed Kittle's face mask. That would be the same Marcus Williams who missed that tackle on Stephon Diggs in the Minnesota Miracle 2 years ago. No, Marcus. As Richard Sherman said of Kittle, quote, "He's playing this game to be rude and to bully people," unquote. 39 yards and 15 penalty yards later, Robbie Gould sent a hush through the Superdome with the game-winning kick. And the 49ers, a franchise that sunk to feeble lows amid the fallout of Colin Kaepernick and Jim Harbaugh, look like a potential Super Bowl team at 11-2, even as their acclaimed defense was being gashed for 46 points. Here was Kittle, the best tight end in football, and a guy who buys tickets for WrestleMania and then plays football like he's inside an octagon.
It's really fun, especially when you got a little bit of space. And like my tight end coach always says, don't let one guy tackle you. Now that was my mindset. You know, just try to run through him, try to carry him as far as I can. I mean, I think I've said my mindset, run through people, but have a good time doing it. And I just try to pick guys up in the huddle. And I think our wide receivers core, our running backs, our line, Jimmy, I think we all did a fantastic job of that mindset all day. You know, we were initiating contact, not letting guys hit us. And, I think we just played a lot of really good football.
And here was Garoppolo, so mature as the leader of this young, emerging team, after throwing four touchdown passes and out-dueling Drew Brees in his finest NFL game.
You know, just kind of be yourself. You can't do anything too crazy because when you're fake, guys see right through that. But, we got a young team, but it's a mature team, if that makes any sense. Guys, you know, they're locked in throughout the whole week. Even, you know, some of the rookies, just the way they take it, and it means something to them. And you love to see that.
Couple more.
Jimmy, is this a statement now that you guys showed everybody you're the best team in the NFC, or is this it's ultimately going to come out of that problem against you?
I wouldn't say it's a statement. I think it's a good step in the right direction. You know, it's we've got a couple games left here to finish the season out and everything, and you know, get into the playoffs. But you know, we're moving in the right direction at the right time.
As for the Saints, they have to be encouraged to a degree to move the ball so easily against the NFL's top-ranked defense, or at least it was the top-ranked defense. But if you noticed late, Brees was holding his throwing elbow before badly missing a pass on a two-point conversion, which would have given the Saints a three-point lead. That allowed the Niners to drive downfield and win with that field goal. Here was Saints coach Sean Payton, not happy.
Listen, you're talking to me right after a tough loss, so are you telling me how I'm supposed to feel? All right, I don't feel encouraged. All right, I feel frustrated because we had opportunities earlier in the game offensively to take advantage of field position. We had a number of opportunities. We had missed assignments, so no, I'm not encouraged that way.
So with Seattle losing to the Rams, the winner of 49ers-Seahawks in Seattle on December the 29th becomes the likely number one NFC seed, and the loser is the number five seed? What a crock. And here's what has changed about the sinking Patriots. The conspiracies, real or imagined, that once haunted opponents now don't even matter, as the six-time champs look like a team that won't hang with Baltimore or Kansas City, maybe others, in the AFC playoffs. A container carrying much of the Chiefs' equipment was not unloaded at the airport on Saturday and somehow was mistakenly shipped to Newark, New Jersey. This being New England, home of Spygate and Deflategate, a lot of us said, And if the bags of 35 players, which included shoulder pads and helmets, had not been rushed back to Boston on Sunday in time for the game, the Chiefs would have had to forfeit. But Mahomes became the latest evolutionary quarterbacking force to beat Brady this season, driving up and down the field in the first half on a tired Patriots defense, while Brady remains stuck in the most frustrated stretch of his magnificent career. Here was Mahomes, whose various injuries concern everybody but Mahomes, apparently.
I mean, it doesn't feel great right now, but it's something that you play with. In this sport, you're going to get hurt. You're going to bang something. And so for me, it's about going out there and competing and relying on my teammates to help me out whenever I'm not feeling maybe 100%. Yeah, I just kind of hit the ground weird when I was kind of throwing that ball away and got hit, got threw it away and got tackled right as I threw it away. And I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know for sure. And I tried to fire that next pass, and it didn't look too pretty. So I kind of just got to let the trainers look at it. They gave me the good to go, and so I went out there, battled, figured out ways to throw the ball across the middle and maybe not shoot those long shots that I usually throw, but enough to get them back and still score touchdowns.
New England fans can blame officials for two wretched calls. N'Keal Harry was ruled out of bounds when he was not costing New England a touchdown, and pass interference wasn't called against the Chiefs' Kendall Fuller. But Belichick was out of challenges. One of them was foolish. And Brady, given a final chance to tie the game at the end, could not connect with Julian Edelman thanks to a great defensive play by Bashaud Breeland. Face it, the Patriots cannot run the ball consistently. The offensive line is allowing Brady to be hit and sacked on a regular basis. And with Edelman double-teamed, Brady does not have weapons and needs trick plays to score touchdowns. And Antonio Brown is not walking through that tunnel, folks. His return officially was ruled out by Bob Kraft and Belichick. Chiefs coach Andy Reid, who has Belichick's number in the regular season, look it up, successfully went for it on 4th-and-1 in the third quarter as the Chiefs kind of shoved around the Patriots in their own zip code. All of which will increase speculation that Belichick and Brady will part ways at season's end, with Brady's father fueling that story by saying the decision is up to Belichick. Do you think Belichick wants to stick with the status quo if they get run out in the first round? Here was Brady with a wrap on his right elbow, his recent anger giving way to resignation.
Tom, when you guys were heading to the locker room after the first half, there were some audible boos coming from the crowd throughout the stadium. Can you guys hear that on the field when you guys are heading to the locker room?
Yeah, you hear cheers, you hear boos. It's part of being in sports.
What was your reaction when that happened after you guys finished with the 7 points in the first half?
Tried to go in and play better, basically.
I don't want to blame the officials, but do you realize you threw a touchdown pass, a legit touchdown pass to N'Keal Harry that was not whatsoever? And how frustrating is that?
Doesn't happen very often, so, it happened, so we still had a chance and wish we could have scored there at the end, so.
And what did Belichick have to say about the officiating? Just what you would expect.
So I was wondering, what was the explanation the officials gave you on that N'Keal Harry looked to be a touchdown?
Yeah, you have to talk to them about that. I'm not going to speak for them.
Bill, did the officiating make it hard to get any sort of tempo and flow in that second half?
Yeah, I don't know.
And here was Reed on the equipment snafu. He could laugh about it because he won the game.
I just know this. Everybody stayed calm and just it happened. So, I mean, it wasn't a big deal. And, I've been doing it for a lot of years, and one out of how many ever years I've been doing it, keeps things exciting.
I love Andy Reid. I hope he reaches the Super Bowl. I'm not seeing it again. Having pretty much sucked this season as a quarterback, Baker Mayfield now is a doctor. In the continuing Browns dysfunction, Mayfield says the team's medical staff mishandled the injury of Odell Beckham Jr., who is reported to have a sports hernia, though Beckham claims not to know what the injury is, of course. Do you believe anything Beckham says at this point, or Mayfield? Why does Mayfield? And I know exactly what he's doing. Mayfield, because he threw a couple of more interceptions, is trying to deflect the story this week from his own problems to the medical staff. More evidence that he's a bigger troublemaker than a leader or an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I'd say that, wasn't handled right. He's not able to run as well as he should be able to, as well as he knows, and that's frustrating for him. You can sense that's some of his frustration, where that comes from. So it wasn't handled the right way in our training room. So, it is what it is. And so his not 100% is still good enough for us.
What do you mean? What was not handled right?
I think he could have been addressed earlier on.
Mayfield's wife can keep sending social media insults to reporters. Fact is, Baker has been horrible this season. This, as reports swirl, that Beckham literally is telling opposing players to get him out of Cleveland. Quite a team guy, that Odell. While coach Freddie Kitchens is haggling with offensive coordinator Todd Monken, as too many game-planning cooks apparently are in the kitchen, or kitchens, you might say. Does general manager John Dorsey have any oversight here, considering the same dissension dogged the Browns coaching staff last year? They won on Sunday only because the opponent was the Bengals, Andy Dalton threw a pick six, and Kitchens let Nick Chubb run the ball. The magical has become the routine for Lamar Jackson, who has become a nation's cure for boredom. Just turn on Jackson and the Ravens, watch him operate in the pistol offense, and life will be exciting again. Still the league MVP frontrunner, Lamar the Foolmaker solved another good defense in Buffalo as the Ravens stalked the number one seed and home field advantage in the AFC. It didn't even matter that a gust of wind blew the notes of Ravens assistant coach Randy Brown onto the field, where they were picked up by Bills cornerback Tre'Davious White, who looked through the notes for a few seconds before a referee took them. Even if opponents know what's coming, they cannot stop Jackson and the Ravens, who are on pace to become the first NFL team ever to average 200 yards running and passing in a season. At one point against the Bills, offensive coordinator Greg Roman had Mark Ingram line up at quarterback and Jackson on the flank. Anybody can have a dual threat zone read quarterback. Not everybody can have Greg Roman to maximize it, which is why Roman is high on the list of the Carolina Panthers and any team that wants to exploit the new offensive wave with a new head coach. And the Texans were so busy worrying about their pregame outfits, the linebackers wore costumes from the movie Dodgeball for some reason, that they forgot to play the damned football game. The Houston defense was overwhelmed by the new quarterback in Denver, Drew Lock. Has John Elway finally found a passer, Drew Lock, in a home debacle that opens the door for Tennessee to possibly overtake Houston and win the AFC South. Those teams play Sunday in Nashville. The Texans, who beat New England a week earlier, were not ready to play, and you can hang that on coach Bill O'Brien, who always seems to come up short year after year. And Devlin Duck Hodges, the undrafted duck caller from Samford, not Stanford, is now 3-0 this season against two quarterbacks drafted number one overall, Mayfield and Kyler Murray, and future Hall of Famer Philip Rivers. The Steelers next play the Bills as they somehow bid for the playoffs after losing, let's see, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Ben Roethlisberger, and other players to injury. Do you realize all of that talent was so corrosive the Steelers did not make the playoffs last season, and that this team might? Mike Tomlin could not control a super team, but with a battered underdog, Tomlin might be coach of the year. Figure that. To college football. Look, I do not root as a professional, but I do have a place in my heart for a delightful grizzly bear of a man who has suffered failure in his coaching career, only to return to his Louisiana homeland to show the sleazy world of collegiate sports how to lift a program with integrity, culture, and heart. His name is Ed Orgeron, and his LSU Tigers head into the college football playoff as the number one seed. Not that Orgeron cares about seeds and opponents. He believes his team can beat anybody, anywhere, and I believe it, too.
You know, it didn't matter to us. Anytime, anywhere, anybody, we're ready to play. So, you know, we're going to be playing Oklahoma, a great football team. Wherever they tell us to play, we're going to show up and we're going to be ready. You know, obviously, the season just ended. Our goal was to go to the SEC championship and win it. That was one of our goals. We're going to be on the road recruiting. I'm sure I'm going to think about it this week, but we're not done yet. That wasn't our final destination. I'm very proud of our offense. I'm very proud of our defense and all our coaches, but we still have some work to do.
Go ahead and mimic that voice, which is smothered in jambalaya and gumbo and all those Bayou goodies. On a January night in New Orleans, about 75 minutes down the highway from Baton Rouge, I'm predicting the beloved Coach O will be lifting a championship trophy. I've seen more than enough to identify LSU as America's best team at present. Radiant in purple, the Tigers have the landslide Heisman Trophy winner and the unstoppable Joe Burrow, the most explosive offense thanks to come-from-nowhere passing coordinator Joe Brady, who is bigger than Tom right now, a playmaking defense with ball-hawking Derek Stingley Jr., the inspirational head coach in the Bayou-born Ogeron, and the 2019 resume to deserve the number one seed in this four-team tournament. After all, the Tigers have beaten four top 12 teams, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, Florida, while Ohio State has beaten two. And when LSU whipped number four Georgia in the SEC title game, well, Ohio State struggled to come back and beat number eight Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game. That also nailed it for the selection committee. LSU has leapfrogged to number one and will have the easier semifinal challenge against flawed number four Oklahoma, while number two Ohio State and quarterback Justin Fields, who is playing in pain with a knee brace, will be a slight underdog, yep, against potent number three Clemson. We often give grief to selection committees, but this group got it right, one through four. And while no top seed has won the national title in the college football playoff era, going in as number one never has been more important given the vast quality differences between Oklahoma and Clemson, which is bidding for its third national title in 4 years, has won 28 straight games, and finally has quarterback Trevor Lawrence playing at the level that produced a championship last year and projects him as the top pick of the 2021 NFL draft, Burrow being the top pick of the 2020 NFL draft. We think Burrow will have no problem in Atlanta against an Oklahoma defense that has improved, but still has been picked apart by passers not even close to Burrow's caliber. You'll be seeing plenty of Burrow this week as he heads to New York to pick up a large piece of hardware, and he expects to keep hanging huge point totals in the final two games.
You know, this was my expectation. I tried to tell people in the preseason, I said 40, 50, 60 points a game. Everybody laughed at me. They said he's crazy. Now, look at us now, but, you know, we expected this. We really did.
The Ohio State-Clemson collision in the Arizona desert will be memorable. Two monster offenses against the country's best two defenses. But if Fields is not operating at 100%, the Clemson defense, led by linebacker Isaiah Simmons, will pose plenty of problems. And this is new territory for the first-year Ohio State coach Ryan Day. While Dabo Sweeney has become the king of January, here is Dabo eyeing his prey.
You know, it's kind of crazy that you got these two kids right here from Georgia, and we got to go all the way out to Arizona to play the game. But it'll be exciting. You know, I've seen Ohio State a few times. I mean, they're unbelievable. This is definitely, and we've played them a couple times. This is easily the most talented and the most complete Ohio State team that we've played in those previous couple times over the last several years. Unbelievable defense. And then what they've done offensively has been special to watch, led by Justin, and what the combination of their run game and their pass game and just the threat that he brings, his ability to beat you with his arm and his legs, he's a special player. So it'll be a great matchup, two great young men, two great quarterbacks that have a great will to win, and should be a heck of a game out there in Arizona.
In the title game, I'm liking LSU over Clemson. That's Burrow versus Lawrence, Ogeron versus Dabo on January the 13th. And do you really think Ogeron in the famous final scene of what would be one hell of a movie will do anything but complete the story on Louisiana soil? As for the number four seed, Georgia's Kirby Smart again failed in the big moment and was accidentally sent sprawling to the turf by his own player safety, Lewis Seen, as they tried to trade chest bumps. Kirby Smart, a lot of hot water down there, wasting the talent, can't win a national title. And the bumbling Pac-12 once again blew a chance to qualify for the playoff. Also, unworthy Utah was ambushed by Oregon, meaning for the fourth time in 5 years, the West Coast is the least coast, and doesn't reach the national semifinals. Consider it a blessing for all of us, because while Oklahoma had difficulty putting away a Baylor team that had to use three quarterbacks, as Jalen Hurts was committing more maddening turnovers and going nowhere on the ground, the Sooners did survive in overtime to snag that final spot. Hurts has to be much better throwing and running the football. I mean, 23 carries, 38 yards. But at least his big play chemistry with receiver C.D. Lamb creates one crumb of intrigue against LSU. I'm sure Alabama fans think their team is more worthy, but you know what? It's refreshing not to see Nick Saban in the playoff, now having to reset and prove to doomsayers that this was just a blip in Tuscaloosa. How precious, by the way, to see Hurts, who had to transfer from Bama to escape his backup role behind Tua Tagovailoa, reaching the playoff when Saban did not. Go do your Aflac commercials, Nick. Aflac! And Saban cannot be happy about this. Look who's back in the SEC. Bart Simpson himself, Lane Kiffin, who was let go by Saban in 2016 and converted a successful self-promoting run at mid-level Florida Atlantic into the head coaching job at Mississippi. Question is, has Lane learned anything about maturity and dignity, or will Kiffin relapse into the knucklehead who pisses everybody off and gets fired in the end? Let's see. Ole Miss has gone from dismissing the scandalized Hugh Freeze, who called escort services on university phone lines, to firing Matt Luke, who lost his final game because his receiver was penalized for pretending to be a urinating dog, to Lane Kiffin, whose brother was fired by Ole Miss years ago as an assistant for recruiting violations. Oxford, Mississippi has been known as the home of literary giants. Now it dumbs down as the dateline for a Twitter troll. But look at it this way. Ole Miss received much more attention for the Kiffin hiring than Florida State, which was winning national titles not long ago, did for hiring Mike Norvell from Memphis. Such is the power of the Lane train. It's almost a miracle that a global sports festival such as the Olympics still could be staged amid dark, divisive world politics. And to see Russia banished from next summer's Tokyo Games as part of a four-year international sports ban for a well-chronicled massive doping scheme, on the surface it feels like long overdue justice. But don't rejoice just yet. This ruling might not be as stifling to Vladimir Putin as you think. First, Putin has 21 days to appeal the decision of the World Anti-Doping Agency to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which is based in Switzerland, where the International Olympic Committee also is based, meaning Putin still can grease a hell of a lot of palms. And if that fails, it's likely that hundreds of clean Russian athletes still will be competing in Tokyo, as they did last year at the South Korean Winter Games, just without the Russian flag and the anthem. Soccer's governing body, FIFA, also is well known for naked corruption, so it's uncertain if the ban impacts Russia's participation in the 2022 World Cup. Wow! Russia cheats. Russians dope. Shocked. Shocked by all of this. To baseball, where Hal Steinbrenner finally is acting like his old man, the boss, in ordering general manager Brian Cashman to sign Gerrit Cole at any cost. And that cost, as set by the dreaded agent Scott Boras, will top $300 million, a record for a pitcher, or at least $250 million. Somewhere in there, I think Boras is going to get it because the Yankees want Cole badly. It won't happen at the annual winter meetings this week in San Diego, but hopefully the fate of top three free agents, Cole, Steven Strasburg, and Anthony Rendon, all Boras clients, doesn't become another winter-long slog, which only drains baseball of whatever interest exists right now. The Yankees twice have whiffed on Cole, first after drafting him, then in an attempted trade, and given the battered state of their rotation, yes, Steinbrenner finally has no choice but to empty those ample resources and try to support the monster everyday lineup. The Angels were believed to be the top destination for Cole, who grew up in Orange County, but owner Arte Moreno already has laid out $430 million for Mike Trout. Will have to ante up for Shohei Ohtani if he wants to keep him, and has to pay through a separate company that he runs for a new or renovated ballpark in Anaheim. So if Cole wants the biggest jackpot and the immediate chance to win a World Series, he will not go to Anaheim. He will sign in the Bronx. And Boris is disgusted with Nationals owner Mark Lerner, who says his franchise can't afford to re-sign two more of Boris's clients, Rendon and Strasburg. Boris is right when he says the Nationals are experiencing, quote, a revenue festival, unquote. Love that. And with Strasburg expected to re-sign in Washington, Rendon becomes the second franchise-type hitter, along with Bryce Harper, last offseason, to depart D.C. Where is he going? I think Texas. I think the Dodgers might make a run at him. He's from the state of Texas, Houston. Houston happens to have a third baseman named Alex Bregman, and they also steal signs, and he doesn't want to go there. I'm thinking Rendon in Texas. Maybe I'm wrong. The Nationals could have repeated by signing both, but you've got cheapskate owners, and they're thinking about, like a lot of owners are, the 2021 labor impasse, so the Nationals will not be repeating. The Cubs, also a revenue festival, are telling agents that they won't be signing free agents until they shed payroll in a trade. Chris Bryant could be involved. Why would you want to trade Chris Bryant? This is known as not investing your profits into the product. Tom Ricketts gave Theo Epstein a ton of money last offseason, and Epstein has wasted all sorts of money in Chicago. And now Ricketts is saying, no, we've got to shed payroll and we've got to trade. Somebody's going to cash in as a free agent, and the Cubs are not going to win another World Series. They're still the Cubs. As for the Dodgers, baseball boss Andrew Friedman is said to have the green light from ownership to spend for Cole or Rendon, but we have heard that before, and Friedman doesn't go down that route. Boris will dominate the week's proceedings like no agent in history. Not only does he have three free agents who will sign deals between $200 million and $300 million+, he also represents Hyunjin Ryu, Dallas Keuchel, and Nicholas Castellanos. No wonder the owners hate Boris. And if I were a ball player, there's no agent I would rather have. To the NBA, a league that more closely resembles a secret fraternity when it comes to college coaches taking over teams. For every Brad Stevens, there is a John Beilein, a career college coach whose first season with the Cavaliers has been rudely interrupted by a revolt in the locker room. Some disgruntled players, including veteran Kevin Love, now on the trading block, told the Athletic website that Beilein, age 66, is ill-prepared for the pro game, and they are tuning him out in favor of younger assistant J.B. Bickerstaff, an NBA veteran whose father Bernie coached in the league for decades. Meanwhile, other players, such as veteran Tristan Thompson, called out the whiners as cowards for staying anonymous and not looking in the mirror when the Cavs are 5-17 after quitting in a blowout in Philadelphia. Said Thompson, best known for cheating on Khloe Kardashian, quote, you can't do that bleep. At the end of the day, if you're going to build a culture and a family, you can't have that chatty patty bleep going on. That bleep is whack to me, end quote. Here's Beilein claiming he has not detected any dissension. Is John kind of clueless here or just trying to shut down a story?
I really feel that we have a really good, that a lot of attention from the players. Everybody's learning. We all have different learning styles. We're trying to do that. What's the best way to grow a team when you have 19-year-olds and you also have 31-year-olds? It's all not going to be the same, so we're trying to do that.
Do you feel like you've had to change your style?
I've changed probably the biggest change in my life about how we've changed. And I'll continue to do that. But that's why I'm still coaching here after all these years, continue to try and find what's the best way to reach people.
It could be years before Cleveland, which is trying to develop Darius Garland and Colin Sexton, neither 21 yet, is competitive in the East. And if Beeline fails, pin the flop on team owner Dan Gilbert, who fell in love with Beeline at the University of Michigan instead of going the NBA assistant route. Love should attract much attention from contenders who know that one key addition could be the difference in reaching the finals. And don't be surprised if Beeline is one and done and returns to the college ranks while Bickerstaff takes over. It's a shame because Beeline is a good man who ran a clean program at Michigan and should have stayed. The cesspool of college basketball needs John Beeline. And how cool is this story? Becky Hammon has let it be known that she will need a 5-year contract if the Knicks want her as head coach. Becky Hammon. The Spurs assistant is asserting her power, you see, in what would be a massive breakthrough in world history. The first female head coach in the 4 major American pro sports. Not that Knicks owner James Dolan, toxic and likely anti-Hammon, ever would consider her. I'm not sure who in his or her right mind would even take this job with David Fizdale and Phil Jackson dragged down by Dolan's all-time ineptitude. But if Dolan does fire President Steve Mills, maybe somebody would take his Mega Millions if promised more control within the operation. I don't know who that person is. Mark Jackson makes the most sense as the next head coach if he wants the agony of terminal dysfunction. As the Lakers continue to roll behind the blissful chemistry of LeBron James and Anthony Davis, the Clippers clearly have taken a step back. It's early, I know, but look at what's going on. After boldly putting up billboards throughout L.A. that take shots at the Lakers, quote, we over me, unquote, for instance, a salvo at LeBron, the Clips were blown out in Milwaukee on a rare night when Kawhi Leonard and Paul George played together, admitting that some players don't even know the plays that are being called. Oddly, Coach Doc Rivers can't figure out how to best use Leonard and George together, with Giannis Antetokounmpo taking advantage of 21 turnovers to have a monster game and assert himself as a candidate to repeat as MVP. The early talk has Giannis falling behind LeBron, Luka Doncic, and James Harden in that MVP race, but please, LeBron has Davis beside him in an all-time pairing, while the spectacular Doncic still has to prove he can maintain dominance all season, while Harden's regular season exploits ring hollow in the playoffs. Giannis has the Bucks atop the East with a 14-game winning streak, with a whopping point differential of 13.6 and the most complete arsenal of offense and defense in the league. And shame on boxing, a sport with no shame, for teaming up with a desperate streaming company to stage a $60 million prize fight in Saudi Arabia, a country with no shame and a hideous record of human rights abuses. And what a waste of time and money it was, as Andy Ruiz Jr., who was overweight at 268 pounds last June when he delivered a massive upset of Anthony Joshua to become a most unlikely world heavyweight champ, arrived at 283 pounds for the rematch. This allowed Joshua to dance circles around him in a farcical unanimous decision, with Joshua reclaiming his 3 heavyweight title bouts. If DAZN, DAZN as they call it, had a conscience, it would issue refunds to the suckers who bought this tripe. But if you weren't smart enough to see this coming, maybe you deserve to lose your $19.99 or $99.99 if you bought an annual subscription to DAZN. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. And Chris, do you find it fascinating that after all the outraged calls to abolish football, that this game is more popular than ever? The storylines are dynamic. And didn't this past weekend reaffirm why this stuff is addicting to watch?
I mean, come on, Jay. There's nothing like an NFL Sunday. For everything that everybody says, and by the way, the officiating stuff is just, it's just hilarious. But there's nothing like an NFL Sunday. Getting to start the day with football, and especially like yesterday, you have the Niners-Saints game, which is just an amazing gem. That rolls into Pats-Chiefs. Then Rams Seahawks, even though I was hoping for Jared Goff to throw more than just two interceptions, I was happy with that. I was happy with that. That made me satisfied, at least, even though the Rams blew away the Seahawks. But you can't deny it. It's the greatest sport to watch on television. Let's be honest. I mean, you try to watch NBA games, because I then had to watch the Laker game last night for work. It's just boring. It's just boring. I kind of, between you and me, Jay, I sometimes just let it go double speed, and I keep the sound down just to try to get through it as quickly as possible. But you don't do that with the NFL. The NFL, nobody's complaining that the games are too long. The NFL is an experience. Even the commercials, every part of it, Jay.
Chris, I've asked this before. I will ask again. Is this the end of the Patriots dynasty? And is Tom Brady a goner at season's end?
No. No. Because, again, we're not saying any of this. First of all, there were some horrible officiating calls in that game where the Pats should have had at least another touchdown. And then at the end, if we're talking about a defender's tip of that ball, Patriots win. And we're talking about, see, Patriots are still fine. They just need to be able to turn it on. Brady was he was running for his life yesterday. He doesn't have a receiver. That's the problem. You don't have Gronk. You don't have something. So everybody knows it's either going to Edelman or guys that frankly can't catch. That's not good for Tom Brady. They need some weapons. I don't know if they're going to be able to figure out how to make that happen before the season's end. But let's all calm down, okay? Let's all calm down.
And knowing your admiration for Ed Orgeron and your frustrations as a USC fan, explain to me again, Chris, why the Trojans didn't want him.
Because the Trojans are idiots. They brought Clay Helton back. They hired a president and an AD to bring Clay Helton back. That's all you need to know.
And finally, please tell me you did not spend $19.99 on a heavyweight bout involving one fighter who weighed 283 pounds.
I did not. I didn't watch any second of it. I think I'm officially, you've beaten it out of me, Jay. I'm done with my boxing days, I think. Until Conor McGregor shows up again.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Tiger Woods and his American teammates are in Australia for the President's Cup, with Woods serving as the first playing U.S. captain in 25 years. Woods did not win his Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas, losing to Henrik Stenson, but his August knee procedure obviously has returned him to the world elite. As he nears 44, Woods is making his first appearance down under since the 2011 matches, where he was cheered by the galleries. This time, Aussie Adam Scott wants the Aussie crowds to cheer for the Aussies, not Woods. Yes, it's Tiger's world again, but let's see how the knee holds up after a long flight and the task of playing consecutive weeks. We tend to avoid politics on Unmuted, except when politics pertain to sports. And I applaud presidential candidate Bernie Sanders for crusading to save the 42 minor league teams targeted for purging by Major League Baseball, which wants to save money even when acknowledging most of its franchises are swimming in money. The owners claim they want to streamline player development and upgrade facilities, but Sanders is not buying it, neither am I, knowing MLB is killing off love affairs that medium and small towns have built with ball clubs for decades. Sanders grew up in Brooklyn when the Dodgers left for L.A. He hasn't rooted for the Dodgers since. And leave it to two Indiana Pacers named T.J., T.J. McConnell and T.J. Leaf, to provide a grounded example for all people in sports and life, really. They have gone dark on social media, meaning TJ stands for Twitter Janked. As McConnell said, quote, "Social media gives people an unfair voice to say things, and there's no consequences for them. It's just not healthy. I spent hours on it, looking at it, and living and breathing by how people viewed me and my game, which is not how you should live your life. Once I got off it, it was like a weight was lifted off my chest." End quote. Congratulations. As I've always said, social media enables people with no lives to have fake lives or semi-lives. And when Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey says he's planning a 2020 move to Africa, maybe it's time we all move away from his petty monster, Twitter. And name the father of the man who is speaking here.
I don't know. I haven't really thought about how it correlates. It's just trying to do my thing, and I think that's what's best, so that's what we're trying to do.
Steve, Phil asked you about the chores. Do you have a memory of your first football chore or one of your first football chores that he asked you to do?
Yeah, I got a couple memories of those.
And you want to share?
Any good?
Yeah, those are between me and him, yeah.
What's the best way to
build? We laugh about him now.
When did you first start watching film? Like, he started when he was in high school.
I've been watching it for a while. Like I said, football's my thing. I remember watching Primetime with Chris Berman back when I lived in Cleveland, and just watching highlights, learning, going into my dad's office in Cleveland, spending time there trying to watch film. Like I said, I don't think I knew what I was doing, but I was trying.
So other kids were watching cartoons, you were watching film?
I mean, yeah, I just wanted to spend time around football, spend time around my dad.
Thank you, Steve.
Figure I'll ask. Any shot you can tell us who's calling plays on defense?
I got a room.
Your answer, of course, would be Bill Belichick, as channeled by son Steve, the Patriots' safety coach. My God, can you imagine this family at Christmas? Nothing but terse monotones at the dinner table?
And now, a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
The tenuous future of sports journalism was supposed to be helped by The Athletic, a startup funded primarily by venture capitalists. But as a subscriber, I have been annoyed, if not alarmed, by what I see as too cozy relationships with the league's teams and subjects the website covers. Yes, The Athletic breaks as many stories these days as ESPN, including the aforementioned John Beilein story, but 12 paragraphs into that story, I almost choked on my lunch when I read this disclaimer, quote, "The Athletic shared its information with the Cavs before publishing the story," end quote. What the hell? Could you imagine somebody sharing information with the White House before publishing a story? What? It's standard journalistic practice to contact a team for comment about such a story, but to, quote, share information, unquote, with a team, that obviously is not the proper phrasing at the very least, and it also suggests The Athletic was overly interested in maintaining a working relationship with the team when armed with a damaging story about that team. Another case? So-called media critic Richard Deitch ignores major stories when they cast aspersions on his favorite people, such as Charles Barkley, who completely escaped Deitch's wrath, despite saying recently to a political reporter, quote, "I don't hit women, but if I did, I would hit you," end quote. How does a media critic not address such a flammable remark in 2019 in a very scolding tone? But then Deitch also short-shrifted the sudden 2018 resignation of ESPN president John Skipper, who claimed he was extorted by a cocaine dealer. This was a major media scandal, but Deitch treated it as a footnote, barely even addressed it, maybe because he doesn't want to damage his relationship with Skipper now at DAZN and jeopardize a possible future working relationship. This is how writers think these days. They protect their asses. Finally, I'm not even done here, you had an Athletic columnist who, instead of trying to reach Addison Russell or his agent after he was non-tendered by the Cubs, preferring to dismiss Russell's departure as no longer being, quote, "our problem," end quote. In doing so, this guy obviously comes off as a Cubs fanboy and did not recognize that Russell still was a major story in sports after being turned into a public social experiment by Cubs boss Theo Epstein. Russell was suspended by MLB for domestic abuse when he never was arrested or charged with a crime, and I am not alone in asking if MLB and the Cubs conveniently used the likes of Russell as public relations scapegoats amid the threat of being blackballed from the sport if they don't go along with the protocol game. By making no attempt to contact Russell in his and The Athletic's reporting, this writer appears to be an Epstein crony. If this is the future of sports journalism, then I'm afraid sports journalism is dead. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.